You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up, you have Fight the Empire.
Good morning, this is Per Fagren calling in from the Winter Palace in Southeast Portland, bringing you Fight the Empire. Well, once again, I heard Portland called the whitest big city in America, but one list I saw puts Portland at number 15, behind Lincoln, Nebraska, which is number 6, El Paso, Texas, 9, and San Antonio, number 10, and at 14, Omaha, Nebraska. Now, these are all well-known cities, but Portland, at number 15, is larger. So if one says the whitest city over 500,000 population, we are it. When it comes to whitest states, Oregon is number 21. When you consider that for many years, Oregon did not allow black people to live within its borders, it was seen that Oregon has made some gains. The black population went from 0 to a little over 2%. Not very many, but more than 20 other states. The point is that history keeps moving. People can outgrow their past. If you would like to comment on these figures, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Well, recently, Chris Hedges wrote an article that appeared in Consortium News, and it's called, quote, Cancel Culture, Where Liberalism Goes to Die. So I'll read a little bit from that. The Reverend Will Campbell was forced out of his position as Director of Religious Life at the University of Mississippi in 1956 because of his call for integration. He escorted black children through a hostile mob in 1957 to integrate Little Rock Central High School. He was the only white person that was invited to be part of a group that founded Martin Luther King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He helped integrate Nashville's lunch counters and organize the Freedom Rides. But Campbell was also, despite a slew of death threats he received from white segregationists, an unofficial chaplain of the local chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. He denounced and publicly fought the Klan's racism, acts of terror and violence, and marched with black civil rights protesters in his native Mississippi, but he steadfastly refused to, quote, cancel white races out of his life. He refused to demonize them as less than human. He insisted that this form of racism, while evil, was not as insidious as a capitalist system that perpetuated the economic misery and instability that pushed whites into the ranks of violent racist organizations. Another part of this on Campbell is Campbell would have reminded us that the demonization of the Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol is a terrible mistake. Once again, this is Chris Hedges writing in Consortium News. Campbell would have reminded us that the demonization of the Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol is a terrible mistake. He would have reminded us that racial injustice will only be solved with economic justice. He would have called on us to reach out to those who do not think like us, do not speak like us, are ridiculed by polite society, but who suffer the same economic marginalization. He knew that the disparities of wealth, loss of status, and hope for the future, coupled with the prolonged social dislocation, generated the poison solidarity that gives rise to such groups as the Klan or the Proud Boys. We cannot heal wounds we refuse to acknowledge. Now, that was Chris Hedges writing in the Consortium News. Another man who has dealt with Klan members is Darryl Davis. Darryl Davis was a African-American musician, R&B musician, an activist, an author, and band leader. His efforts to fight racism, in which he engaged with members of the Ku Klux Klan, convinced Klansmen to leave and denounce the KKK. Davis has actually he has met with Klansmen, and he has sort of turned them away from this group, and he has some of them in response have given him their Klan robes as souvenirs. So he has about 20 Klan robes in his closet. He claims to have been responsible for between 40 and 60, and indirectly over 200 people leaving the Klan. So this is another instance where the Klansmen were just not canceled out of his purview, but he met with them and he persuaded them to see better ways of living in society and living with other people. A lot of listeners may not have been around when George Wallace was in the news. At one time in Alabama, he was considered something of a liberal. He was a circuit judge and then ran for governor in the Democratic primary. Wallace, at that time, was endorsed by the NAACP, and his opponent, John Patterson, was backed by the Ku Klux Klan. Well, George Wallace lost, and he vowed not to let that happen again. He became a hardcore segregationist and then governor of Alabama. He later ran for president on the American Independent Party. In 1972, he was shot while campaigning and became paralyzed from the waist down. He also became a born-again Christian and renounced his segregationist past. He went full circle, only now he was in a wheelchair. So if anyone has a question or a comment on this, the number to call is 503-231-8187. How should we deal with racist groups like the Ku Klux Klan? What what should be our response. Like I said, number to call is 503-231-8187. It's been almost 20 years since the 9/11 attacks that brought down the World Trade Center and killed almost 3,000 people. In the ensuing total war on terror, the United States has spent $6 trillion on wars that have killed 500,000 people. Now, that's from a report by Brown University's Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs. Actually, the report is over a year old, but the wars are still going on, sometimes more, sometimes less, with no end clearly in sight. And the lives and money and the lives and money will never come back. This is an outgrowth of our war on terror, and we have a huge military budget have $6 trillion that could be spent elsewhere. Every day I read in the news that some humane activity, some organizations, government bodies that actually help people are starving for funds and they can't do the work that they are called to do. Well, there is every year there is almost $1 trillion sitting in the Pentagon's war budget. Why can't that money be tapped for things we need here at home? So that is a question that I am asking people to ponder. If you want to call in, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Here's also here's another question, or maybe three. Will artificial intelligence take over? How? How will it take over? Will it acquire a self? We hear constantly that artificial intelligence can do things that people can never do, and if somehow this artificial intelligence, which I guess operates in computers and where does artificial intelligence operate?
We have Edie on the line.
We have somebody on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Answer to your question, I have research-based solutions and solutions that have been proven in the experience and lives of former neo-Nazi recruiters, white Klansmen, fascists.
Oh,
and
really?
The answer that they gave was that if we are the enemies attacking them and treating them with contempt and scaring them, they're going to feel like we're the enemy and they are going to be defensive and attack us. But that doesn't, it makes them more entrenched and more self-righteous and defending their actions that actually causes them discomfort and cognitive dissonance. What will get them out of that is if we treat them with respect and compassion and we role model the humility and curiosity that cares about other people and their perspective. We role model and we give a safe space for listening and respect and empathy and the courage to repent or to change our perspectives and our behaviors. When we give a safe space for grace, when we role model it, when we aren't pushing our agenda but are caring about them meeting their needs for safety, their needs for self-respect, their needs for agency, for influence, for meaning, for purpose, for belonging, then there can be that open space to question, to rethink, and to try something if we give them courage and protection. I've never met a human being that is perfect. I know that I have many times been very self-righteous, thinking that something is truth or right, and I've had to change it multiple times. And I've dealt all my life with abusers. And I've always wondered, well, why are they mean? Why are they dishonest? And behind it all is fear, and the answer to fear is truth and love. And so it's not just the Christian demand to overcome evil with good. It's not just some bleeding heart liberalism or something. It is the most courageous, most powerful, principled, and most effective and long-lasting solution. And in it, it heals us in that process.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to have on your show some former neo-Nazis, etc., you may want to kind of hide their voice and their name, because they're extreme danger from everyone on the continuum of political beliefs. But we have people in Portland that are daily risking their lives to try to have former incarcerated people, former well-to-do Nazis, I mean, having people that they were formerly with, change. And that takes a lot of patience, a lot of courage, a lot of time, a lot of humility, and a lot of love. And if we're not going to do that directly, what we can do is provide that support for those who are. So I recommend you invite some of the formers on and tell about their personal stories and the kind of support that they need from those of us who are too cowardly to do the hard work.
Mm. Well, every now and then on KBOO, I do hear former Nazis as guests on various shows. They talk about, you know, their former lives and what made them see the light and how they're doing now. Have you met with any of these folks?
Oh yes, yes, yes. But I'm not going to give their names over the air.
No, of course not. No. Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about them?
I think that instead of diminishing some of their stories by summarizing it, it's much more powerful when you hear the catch in their voice and people on. Who have heard my voice a lot, but these are voices we don't hear very often, and or I've never heard on KBOO. And it was one moment where they saw the humanity of someone else and they connected with their own humanity. And we have to have nonviolent communication. Start with empathy for ourselves, and what are those needs? It's either safety, it's respect, it's belonging, and so we have solutions. You know, we can be working together in mutual aid for food without having to call it anarchist and anti-fascist and like that, but we can counter the fascism by providing a powerful, belonging way for people to help people, you know, create gardens or food security or some general construction, you know, a handyman, or various things in which they are embraced and included and supported, and they get the high that none can counteract of connecting with someone else, connecting with our highest ideals in service to others. Mm-hmm. And so we can, anyway, I think instead of me giving some of each person's, you know, and I'm not sure their names, but instead of giving each of their stories, I can give the general pattern and then invite you to please have them tell their personal story, and also ask them, what can those who are cowardly hypocrites do to support them in a courageous, compassionate work that we desperately need?
Do you know of any organizations that are doing this kind of work?
Oh, yeah, you can look online. There's Life Beyond Hate, Formers. There's a whole bunch of names. There's a whole bunch of names out there of organizations and groups and individuals. You can go to the Yes magazine. There's an article about by a woman who in the South had been really promoting Nazism, and how she's every day is on the phone with people on long conversations. So she's given her name and her face. You can go to Yes magazine, you can interview her, you can talk to her. And then she can connect you with some of the other folks that are like a lot of people in Portland who are needing to have their voice and their name masked.
Well, that's very encouraging. I'd like to thank you very much. Is there anything more you want to add to that?
Nope, let's hear their voices.
Well, if anybody wants to call in, the number is 503-231-8187. The question I have is it possible? Can you shame these people? Can you shame racists into changing their ways? Or are there different ways of doing this? Shame seems to be, with some people, seems to be a motivating thing these days. I don't think it works, but maybe other people have a different opinion.
We have Brian on the line.
We have Brian on the line. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, hi. Been listening to your show this morning. Thanks again for doing it. And all the years you've done it, I really appreciate that. The last caller, I wholeheartedly agree with. But I did have a couple questions about that. One of them is seeing the, and I might be misunderstanding something because I wasn't catching everything. But it seems like a lot of it's based on the people that are on the right that are really, you know, when we think about January 6th and all that. A little bit of a stereotyping of them as being maybe uneducated, fearful for their well-being. But what we find is a lot of the people that have been perpetrating and truly the true believers in things like the QAnon, it turns out they're not a bunch of uneducated, poor Southerners. I mean, these are people from all over the country, at some of them highly educated and you know, fairly affluent people that are truly bought into these kind of mindsets. So that people that aren't, I don't think a lot of them not fearful for their, you know, where their next meal is going to come from or their, you know, their health. So that's where I get confused about how to proceed with this. And a lot of times, well, when we talk about how can we bridge the gap, how can we talk to each other, saying that often comes to mind is we have to proceed with respect. We have to respect. And that's what I would love to hear a show on. How do I access respect for them? How do I do that? Because everything about that movement goes against what I respect. I just don't respect anything about that movement that promotes, you know, racism. It promotes violence, it supports misogyny from everything I can see about it. How do we do that? So that's what I'd like to see a show about. How do I proceed and learn how to bridge the gap and have whatever kind of respect that I need to proceed? Because I don't know where to find that. And also to address one of your questions, one of the names to look up as far as an anti-Nazi, former anti-Nazi, is Christian Picciolini. And his last name is Picciolini, and you can also find more information through the Southern Poverty Law Center. They've done a lot of work in regards to the things that she was talking about. Anyway, that's what I had to say and questions I had to ask.
Well, thank you very much for your call. Well, getting when it comes to what is the sort of, how do you, getting back to Darryl Davis, he's the African-American musician, and he wound up talking to a guy. They were talking about music.
He was back in 1983. He was playing country western music in a white bar in Frederick, Maryland, when a patron came up to him and said it was the first time he had, quote, heard a black man play as well as Jerry Lee Lewis. Davis explained to the man that Jerry Lee learned to play from black blues and boogie-woogie piano players, and he's a friend of mine. The white patron was skeptical and over a drink admitted he was a member of the KKK. The two became friends, and eventually the man gave Davis contact information on KKK leaders. A few years later, Davis decided that he wanted to interview Klan members and write a book on the subject to answer a question, why do you hate me when you don't know me? And so this became Davis's sort of purpose in life. He, like I, he said, he talked to many Klan members, and I think he had a collection of about 25 Klan robes in his closet that they gave him. So, well, it is possible to do this. I don't know. I'd go back to my own experience. I think one of the, we think of racists as being these characters out of some bad movie, but one of the most racist characters I ever met was a student at an Ivy League university, and this guy was very well spoken and very polite, but the things he said were really just terrible, but he was able to present himself as a civilized human being, and he sort of probably in his own circle of friends. Unfortunately, many of them at the college, he was able to get away with it. And so this is something to think about.
Marcus is on the line.
Oh, Marcus is on the line. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I thank you for your commentary and the examples you were giving from Klansmen of the past and the caller that was talking about efforts to denazify people or to move people out of racist organizations. Unfortunately, that's very much out of style right now in Portland and other cities. The progressive community, such as it is, that those people that are actually stepping up have pretty much congealed around the idea that fascism is a thing and that it can only be resisted oppositionally, that a confrontation is the only solution. In my estimation, this is something that only reinforces the dynamic. Locally, there was a very famous quote by Joey Gibson that Antifa made me. That we would have been just a bunch of guys with flags hanging around on a street corner if Antifa hadn't come along. That essentially the people that we perceive as our ideological enemies actually thrive on conflict. And in my mind, the left is playing right into the trap by providing that conflict, which is mutually reinforcing, and the left winds up reflecting very much that which they were opposed to. The idea that fisticuffs and guns and violence at all would be valued on the left is kind of a new thing. Unless you go back 50 years to the radicalism of the late 60s and 70s, most folks that consider themselves progressive were worried about guns. Now guns are back in style. Now the idea of having a street brawl on the streets of Portland is seen as a winning ticket. It's everything that you were talking about diffusing the problem, about essentially creating an opening for those people to leave and abandon false ideas and false assumptions and bad associations. The current progressive community, I guess, is in opposition to that. That's the best I can do with saying it.
Well, at least not everybody. I don't think everybody, but there are some very vocal people who seem to think you can shame these fascists into mending their ways. And I don't think that seems very unlikely to me. Are you still on the line? I guess not, but we are getting near the end of the show. How do you deal with well, not just Nazis, but just kind of racist people? Racism seems to pop up in many, many ways, many unexpected places. How do you deal with it? This is something that really needs some sort of a solution or some sort of progress. But we are near the end of the show now, and I'd like to thank our people for calling in, and I'd like to thank KBOO Radio. This is your radio station, and it's people out there, our listeners, our members, who keep this station on the air. We are here for you, and we are here to talk with you and to hear your voice on the airwaves. So stay tuned to KBOO because it is your radio station, and there are more good programs coming up. Thank you for listening.